Well, I visited some of the affected areas today by road, and I can see for myself that lots of landslides have taken place into these affected areas, which will make the delivery of assistance difficult and challenging. A lot of the areas around the Gorkha, which is one of the epicentres, many of the villages are very remote. They're on high ridges and they're sparsely populated. And so the difficulties in getting to them quickly before the rains and the monsoons are here in 3 or 4 weeks, I think those are the major challenges. And there's also then the supply of material to the affected areas by using combination of helicopters, obviously, small trucks, four-wheel tractors and cars. And we've actually started to use trekkers and porters, which are normally used for the tourist season. This area is quite close to Everest and the Annapurna Trail, which are very popular resorts. Now there's no tourists here, so we're using those trekkers and those porters to help deliver with mules assistance into the very remote areas. And that's something we have to accelerate between now and the next 3 weeks. And also, the funding has been low in terms of the flash appeal response, and we're hopefully trying to generate more interest now from donors. We have a series of meetings last week in New York and also here in Nepal, and there'll be something in Geneva as well with some of the humanitarian donors.
You mentioned recently in a press release issued by your office that this is a race against time and that the implications will be severe if the funding requirements are not met. What are those implications exactly?
Well, the implications are that you've got a population who are normally affected by the monsoons, and it's quite a tough place to live. People had some of their harvest that's been destroyed because of the avalanches. The normal routes down to some of the areas where they can pick up supplies, etc., have been destroyed by landslides. There's a lot of the terrain has been badly affected by the earthquake. There's lots of massive cracks and fissures across these areas, and with more rain in the future, it's likely there'll be very large landslides in some parts of these settlements might actually disappear. That's the physical side of things. There's also the psychosocial side of things, where people have been traumatized with a large series of aftershocks, three big ones, but there's over 200 in the last 4 weeks. And I think that, plus living in conditions where you don't have shelter to protect you and your family and your livestock and also your harvest so you can live on. So it's important that we get the material to them, the water and sanitation support, shelter material and food. And if people are psychologically affected as well as struggling physically and isolated, these are serious issues.
What is being done in terms of management of trauma, especially after the second earthquake?
Well, there's been a lot of work done from UNICEF and other UN agencies. The idea is to try and set up these centres, especially targeting children. And it's like free spaces, which will also be used for schools. And we're trying to get the schools back to offer some sort of package for children, which would be psychosocial. Obviously, a continuation of their education and some feeding programmes. And that's something that we think will help. The difficulty is that some of these areas are very remote. To try and get the material there and find space to clear debris and rubble is a challenge, but that's something we're working on at the moment.
It is my understanding that besides the need to help to rebuild their places, the population have been also mentioning the need of seeds. Are these going to be distributing on time for planting, in your opinion?
Well, I think in some of the areas we've managed to do that. Some people have been able to retrieve some of their harvest and some of the seeds they have from previous. We'll also have to try and supply seeds of the appropriate kind at the appropriate time. Again, it's part of the logistics channel of getting those to them during that time. They have to plant before the monsoons and we have to get the right seeds. Those areas normally grow potatoes, barley and maize. And we're working with the UN agencies and some donors here to try and make sure that we have a supply pipeline which will deal with that.
When do you think it will be possible to start thinking about actually rebuilding the country? In other words, when do you envision that the emergency state will be over?
Well, I mean, people themselves have started rebuilding their houses. I mean, they're not going to wait for us to come along and help them. They've salvaged a lot of material from their houses. The private sector here has been trying to push selling people with corrugated iron and new wood to rebuild their houses. People have started to clear rubble away where they can. I think that's one thing. There's also a program by the banks, the UN and the EU to do a PDNA, post-disaster needs assessment. The fact that it's going to be quite a slow process, some areas will get served rather quickly because they're close to urban areas, but the far remote areas and the mountainous areas will find it very hard to be programmed in a way. And we'll need to start thinking of ways of building back better, building back smarter houses and buildings, and designing those and training people on how that's done is going to be another challenge as well.
Can you describe the state of mind at this moment, not only of the population, but also of the humanitarian teams?
Well, I mean, it's tough when you're struggling against the elements, struggling against the physical side of things, and you're struggling against getting pipelines and resources in place on time. And you know the clock is ticking.